The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Welcome to the Soul Mason Show!
Wherever and whenever you are listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to one and all. You can listen to the Phil Nason Show at 5 p.m. Eastern on Max Sports Channels, at 10 p.m. Eastern on the Superstation of Talk, TalkSuperstation.com, and at various times throughout the day on Armed Forces Radio and Cosmic Radio. I'd like to welcome you to the Phil Nason Show. Man, do I have a great show planned for you today, and we've got some exciting things happening. Today's our Mets Day. Mark Berman from bloggingmets.com is here to join me, and we are actually going to be broadcasting and probably the only sports show or Mets show broadcasting the probability that Zach Wheeler will throw a no-hitter tonight. Now, he is currently through six innings. He's beginning the seventh inning, and he's throwing a no-no. Mark Berman, welcome to the show, man. This is exciting stuff, ain't it?
Very exciting and very optimistic of you saying the probability that he throws a no-hitter. So you believe.
I do. You know what? You know what I say. Okay, this is a radio show, and I got to do something. You know, we have to have some energy here. Mm-hmm. But I say this every week on my fantasy show. Don't throw Zach Wheeler away just yet. And I've been very critical of him, as you know. Mm-hmm. But like I said last week, I said Washington. I should have said Atlanta. And it doesn't matter because Zach Wheeler is, for whatever reason, good, bad, indifferent, whatever. The kid is pitching pretty good, and tonight he's throwing awesome stuff. There's no way that I can see this, as you know, because I have to have all the CPUs to broadcast the show and record the show. But you're watching it right now. This kid's electric, isn't he?
Yeah, his fastball looks really good tonight. Really good curve also. He's really, just throwing that curve. It's really moving. And yeah, he's looking great. He looks confident on the mound. Obviously, he threw six innings, but hasn't let up a hit, so no reason not to be confident.
Why not?
He's looking good. Yeah.
I'm very, you know what? I'm usually a very positive person when it comes to these things. I've been coaching for so long, you know, and you know something? These no hitters, these are a big deal. I don't care what level you play. This is a big deal.
Absolutely. And some people will try to, if he does throw the no hitter, he's up against Giancarlo Stanton now. People might say, oh, it was the Marlins. They're not a good team. Doesn't matter. They're still a baseball team. They're still capable of getting a hit. So if he is able to complete this, it's an accomplishment that, you know, it doesn't matter what team he's facing.
To me, I don't care. You know what? And I'll tell you this. He pitched really good in his last game. Well, good, yeah, I guess. But sometimes I forget that this is a rookie. He's, what, 22 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't – I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's the way he carries himself. It scares me, not because he's scary, but he just doesn't seem to have that body language that this is my show, like, say, Zach – or, say, like, Matt Harvey or Yu Darvish or someone like that, if you understand what I mean. He doesn't have that, but it doesn't really matter.
No, not everybody has that. I mean, you know, it's the really not everyone is the fiery competitor. But if you have the stuff and you have the talent, doesn't matter.
Exactly, and it's looking good thus far, isn't it?
Yeah, I like him.
Okay.
He just struck out Stanton for the first out.
There you go.
On a swinging strike that didn't look like he swung. Here's the replay, and it was definitely inside. I think he held up. I'm not going to complain.
No. We don't do that. We didn't complain when Beltran hit the ball down the line, and we're not going to complain over this.
No, it's funny. I was in Washington this weekend. I was talking to some guy about Johan's no-hitter, and he's like, one-hitter. I'm like, it was a no-hitter. Well, it was a one-hitter. I'm like, doesn't matter. It was a no-hitter. It doesn't matter what happened. It's a no-hitter.
Exactly. That's what the record books say. Just like the home run is – the home run total is 73, even though – I kind of consider the Maris thing pretty untouchable, considering that the three people who broke that were all absolute steroid users.
Yeah, but they still happen, those home runs.
Absolutely.
You can't erase them.
So now, geez, this is exciting. It kind of threw us all off the path, but That's okay. I'd rather be thrown off the path by a probable no-hitter. Again, I said probable no-hitter because it's looking pretty darn good. And the Marlins are stiff when it comes to hitting. So this is so far a good thing.
Yeah, and the pitch count is low. I think he's just threw his 75th pitch.
Yeah, okay. That's the thing that always is, as you know, has concerned me the most about him is how many pitches he throws.
Yeah.
And this is a good thing. I like to see this. I like to see this. We want to see him really knock it out.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he does.
Yeah, this is exciting. Yeah, me too. We can broadcast it live on the radio.
Yeah, or pre-recorded, but...
Well, yeah, but still.
Still.
Live to tape.
Yeah, well, we're ahead of the bloggers because we can prove it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's all that matters. You know something, Mark? I got to tell you, this has happened to you hundreds of times, I'm sure. It happens to me all the time. I title my show provocatively, as you know, because I want people to get some attention to it. And last week I titled the show is Ike Davis, the biggest bust in New York Mets history. And I was amazed at how many people responded to that without even listening. And I can tell they didn't listen because of their responses. Now, I expect that from the empty-headed parts of the fan base.
Right.
But when someone who works for SNY does it, I mean, come on. We weren't talking about Jason Bay. We were talking about first-round draft choices.
Right. We weren't talking about players acquired by trade or free agency because there's tons, you know, Mets have had many, many, many busts. But, yeah, that's what we're talking about. And that happens to me a lot, too. I'll tweet one of my stories with a link to the story, and people, you know, bash me for the little headline that I wrote. It's like, read the story, and you'll understand what I'm saying. So, yeah, people don't always read. They get kind of a knee-jerk reaction to things, which is kind of silly.
And I usually don't tweet at somebody unless I or show, you know, whatever you call it, spamming. Mm-hmm. Unless I mention them on the show, then I do it. As a courtesy. You can't talk about people and then not tell them. That's not nice. Mm-hmm. And he was the impetus for the entire thing because he sent out a tweet earlier that day talking about Ike Davis and saying, where are you now? He's slumping. Where are you now? Who are clamoring for his arrival. And that was how the whole thing came up.
I'm going to interrupt you because he just let up a hit.
Oh, shoot. Well, anyway, so much for my positive thinking.
Yeah.
And you know something? It just doesn't matter because... Congratulations, Zach Wheeler. You're starting to win me over.
Yep. He's looking good. He's a rookie. And as we've said in the past, Matt Harvey was more polished than we thought coming up. And we expected the same thing from Wheeler because we keep hearing Wheeler is going to be better than Harvey. And he might be one day, but he's just right now not as polished. But that's okay. He doesn't have to be. He's still looking good. I mean... You know, he's got the pitches, he's got the talent. He just needs to put things together. Interestingly, he spoke to Kevin Burkhart before a game last week, and he was talking about his approach. And he said in the minor leagues, his first pitch would be a slider just outside, and minor leaguers would swing at it all the time. And the majors, they don't. They know it's outside. They're not swinging at it. So that's one thing he's had to adjust to. He had to adjust his whole strategy in pitching because he can't throw that. Get that first pitch slider for a strike anymore. And that's the difference between the majors and the minors.
Absolutely it is. And he's starting to learn. And this is a good thing. It's really nice to see. You know, well, I can still be as critical as I need to be. But sure. Honestly, in the last couple nights that he's pitched, he's been really good. And yeah. I didn't get to see – I missed that doggone game against Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really mad because I did, because the internet went out. In our whole neighborhood. So both places where I could get it, I couldn't get it, and I was really ticked. Because I'm starting to watch him, and now I have a new computer coming probably in a few hours.
Oh, good.
And then I'll have even more CPU power, and that stream won't shut down, and I'm going to record these games with it. And this way I can really start to pay attention again. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's a pain in the butt. To try to analyze these guys on a highlight reel or on some download when you never know if you're going to get the entire at bat or whatever. But goodness gracious, Zach Wheeler. So when you look at Zach, and we hope this continues from him, oh, they scored a run.
Oh, I looked away for a moment. They did. I didn't even see that.
I have the running tally going. They did score
a run. They're going to score a second run.
Oh, nice.
Now it's 2-2. It's 2-2.
And now you know what they'll say is that Berman and Nason's jinxed them.
Yeah. I think it only counts if the team's broadcasters say it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know how some of our fans are.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have lots to talk about besides Zach Wheeler.
Okay.
The Washington series. It was like the Redskins and the Jets. A lot of runs scored, but...
Yeah.
What about Henry Mejia?
Yeah, I really didn't see the game. I was actually on a bus going to D.C. when the first game was played. But yeah, I mean, he pitched well. But seven shot innings, I think. Seven strikeouts, no walks. And the offense just exploded. So that was one of their better statistical games in any case all season, but then didn't last.
Well, I got to see that one because it was in the afternoon. Mm. He was pretty good. You know, people, I don't mean to be critical of the fan base, but I am.
Okay.
I'm going to be. Look, Henry Mejia, they were talking about him. Wow, he'll be the number three starter. Look at all you have. No. Listen, be careful here. Henry Mejia has had two surgeries on his arm, and he's about to have a third one in the offseason. You can't count on him for anything.
Is he having a third one?
Yeah, he's got bone chips in it. He has to have that taken care of at the end of the season.
That's reasonably minor, right?
Yeah, I have to have the same thing this winter.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So we can't count on you to pitch for the Mets either.
No, shucks, and I wanted to. I was looking forward to it. I'd love to.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I wouldn't love to pitch on that team, but
yeah, Mejia. Yeah, you can't count on him. I mean, you know, don't forget Mejia. A few years ago, he was, you know, the next Matt Harvey and the next Zach Wheeler, and didn't work out that way. So, you know, if he can give something extra, that's great. But yeah, to count on him is a bad idea.
I think it's a very bad idea. But I still, you know, people blame Omar Minaya and Jerry Manuel for bringing him up, and I don't blame them at all. And they say, well, they had him mixed up because he was pitching relief and then he's starting. That's not why he hurt his arm. He just hurt his arm. Some people just get hurt. But this kid has better stuff, or at that time did have better stuff, than Harvey or Wheeler.
Yeah, he was very highly regarded. I think in 2009, I believe it was 2009 when they brought him up, his usage was weird. Like, he'd pitch in the eighth inning, he'd pitch in the fifth inning. He never had a set role, which I think hurt him. And again, pitching out of the bullpen for the first time, you think you'd want to give him a set role, and they just didn't. I think they misused him badly.
Yeah, but that's not why he got hurt.
Probably not.
But yeah, they did misuse him. I would have probably either started him or just kept him down in AAA, or even single AA where he was supposed to be to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you do when a kid's throwing 101 and painting the corners?
And doing well in spring training. I mean, you got to. I had no issue with bringing him up, but it was the usage that was bad. And getting hurt, I'm sure that just happens. It seems like every young pitcher gets hurt. I mean, Strasburg went through it. Jaime Garcia on the Cardinals, who had that really great rookie year last year. He had Tommy John the year before that, I think, or 2 years before that. So many young guys are getting hurt and end up coming back stronger.
Because of all the pitches they're throwing.
Yeah.
The different pitches, I mean. And they're throwing harder than ever, a lot of these
guys.
Right,
and they're probably starting to throw curveballs too young when they shouldn't.
Oh, yeah. I remember when I played baseball, they didn't let kids throw curveballs until they were like 12 or 13.
Yeah, they shouldn't. I mean,
no, shouldn't.
A curveball is not a natural motion for the arm. So if you start throwing it young, you're going to hurt yourself.
More than likely.
Yeah.
Unless that's all you throw.
Yeah.
Because it's a completely different release from the fastball. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about as far as my expertise in pitching goes. But,
yeah, you and me.
But serving, you know, tennis serving is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We teach the slice serve to kids when they're young.
Oh, really?
Which is a kind of a similar motion. But the thing is that the racket absorbs most of the shock, and it comes down. And by the time everything gets said and done, your elbow, nothing happens to your arm because it ends up dying in the handle. Mm-hmm. But this way, you don't have a handle. Your elbow is your handle. And,
right.
And this is a different issue. But, yeah, we teach it from early on because kids can't hit flat serves very well for any speed because they're not tall enough. They hit the ball in the net a lot. But still, I don't see why they're letting these – or how they're letting these guys, these young kids – rag their arms out throwing curveballs, but we don't know if that's what happened to Henry Mejia or any of these other guys. That's just an opinion, a theory we have. Anyway, but the Washington series was dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
The Mets at that time had a very good opportunity to overtake Philly and get into third place.
Yeah, I mean that game, the Friday night game, they were up one. They were up 1-0, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were up 1-0 and they lost in the ninth inning. That was bad. That was kind of a crushing loss because the Mets were going, you know, they would have been, would have been their third straight win. They would have had fewer losses than I think Philly and Washington. And they just blew it. And then Saturday, and I was at Sunday's debacle, the 14-1 game. Yeah, Carlos Torres. I mean, there's a reason he was a career minor leaguer, and I think now we're seeing it.
Yeah, you know it's interesting too how fast and how fickle the fan base is, how quickly they just rip on these guys. Hefner's another one. Mm-hmm. Everybody was all gaga for Jeremy Hefner, and then he's had three bad outings in a row, and now it's yo, he sucks. And Torres sucks too. Well, we know that they suck, dudes. We've been listening to our show. This is why you should listen. We tell you these things. But I will say this. I'm still optimistic for Jeremy Hefner. I know that sounds unbelievable coming from me. But I really think he's going to be okay in the end.
But are you expecting him to be a front-end starter or a back-of-the-rotation guy?
Or
a long reliever?
I think he's going to wind up the fifth starter next year.
Okay, that's acceptable. I think, as we said, a lot of Met fans, they get too excited. And it's like, oh, man, this guy's an ace. He's going to be the next, you know, Matt Harvey Jr. And he's not. There's a reason these guys are in the minors so long and haven't progressed. They're just not that good. And someone like Hefner is perfectly adequate and is fifth starter at best. I mean, he's never going to be anything better than that. And that's fine, but you can't have too many expectations for the guy. You remember, I think it was Colin McHugh last year or 2 years ago made his debut. Didn't he throw like 7 scoreless innings or something?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, oh, Colin McHugh, wow, he's going to be the next great starter. And then he just collapsed.
Last year.
That was last year? Okay.
Because we talked about it, remember?
Yeah.
I think we did. I'm sure we did.
Yeah, I'm sure. If it was last year.
Yeah,
people get too carried away. You have to, you know, temper your expectations.
Yeah. That's why they signed their name on Facebook, Joey Bag of Donuts.
What?
Yeah.
You lost me on that one.
Okay, there's a guy that posted one of the Mets forums. His name is Joey Bag of Donuts.
Mm.
He doesn't give his real name and he says some of the stupidest stuff I've ever seen. And that's why he does that.
Yeah.
But still in all, I think I like Hefner. I do. Maybe I'm just being stupid. But I'm generally right about these things.
Yeah.
Usually.
Like I said, if you're expecting to be the number 5 starter.
No more than that.
That's very reasonable.
No, dude, no more than that. In fact, I wouldn't be upset if they just put him in the bullpen. But I think he belongs on a club. I think he's earned... What I think he has is I think he's earned a place on the roster until somebody takes it from him. That's what I think. I don't care about these 3 games because, okay, he got lit up like the 4th of July, but still in all, I think it has more to do with that break he took. To me, something happened when he pitched against Philly that night. Mm-hmm. Or not Philly. It was against Pittsburgh. When he pitched so well and they pulled him, he hasn't done anything since. And I think it became one of those issues where, and I see this in tennis sometimes, where what more can I do? And they just kind of like get stuck in a holding pattern until they get over that. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know Jeremy Hefner, so I don't know.
Right. It could have just been the All-Star break. I mean, he was on a tremendous roll, and suddenly this break comes, and he got out of his rhythm, and everything changed for him. So it could have just been something as simple as that.
Or now they're using a six-man rotation, so he's got an extra day of rest. He's probably never had that much rest before.
Yeah, I don't like the six-man rotation. I really don't. I don't see the need for it.
Well, I don't see the need for a lot of the things that the Mets do, including show up most nights.
Yeah, that's true.
But still, I mean, I don't get it. We've got so much to talk about tonight, too. I just don't get it. Philadelphia is really sucking, though. They've lost eight in a row.
Have they finally won a game?
No, so far, as of this recording, they've lost eight in a row.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, Cole Hamels, what's going on with him?
He went to Schimmel.
Yeah.
My Yiddish is coming out. See?
It looks like they're winning right now 6-3 in the seventh inning, so that may come to an end.
Yeah, and now we went from probable no-hitter to maybe another loss.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a bummer? And speaking of bummer, you know, what the hell does Matt Harvey have to do? He pitched a really good game the other night, and again, he lost. Did he get the loss?
No, he didn't. No decision.
Number 12 of the year?
Yeah, I don't understand how in the world he gets 11, 12, whatever it is, no decisions. How is that even possible?
Don't you listen to this show?
Well, I don't listen to it, but I'm on it.
don't we tell him every week why?
It's amazing, though. Like, I know the Mets have no hitting, but...
That's why.
And you know what? And that happens. It looks like it's 11 no decisions. He's 8-2, 21 games. You ever notice that always happens to one pitcher every year on the Mets and probably other teams? But one year it was Yoan Santana. They kept blowing games for him. There's always one pitcher every year who has a bunch of no decisions.
Pelfrey had a few that year too, right?
Yeah. You know what I think it is? And I'm not making this up. I've heard this kind of theory that if the ace is going, the offense can kind of, we don't have to score many runs today. And they kind of just relax a little bit.
I've heard that,
and I think that could be possible. And, you know, when you have someone on the mound who's not very good, the offense is like, oh, man, if we want to win this game, we're going to have to score 12 runs. And they just get up for it. And you wouldn't think at that level that kind of thinking happens, but apparently it does.
Where's Captain America when we need him?
Hey, he's having a good year.
He is having a good year, but he's not doing – like the other night, Sunday night, Derek Jeter steps up. He hasn't played a major league game in a year. First pitch, he goes yard, and they go wild. And do you know why? Because the captain's back. He says, let's go. We got business to take care of. And that's the way they are. That's what a captain, a leader does. Our captain is the captain by default.
I don't know if he's a captain by default. And I think we talked about this last week. Jeter is just one of the extraordinary players, the elite of the elite, who just get the hits like that when they need to. When you think about Mike Piazza, how many huge hits did he get? You know, the 9-11 home run, all these like huge home runs he got because he was just at that elite of elite level. And David Wright just isn't that kind of player. He's a superb player. He's excellent. He's almost elite, but he's not the elite of the elite. And there's maybe 10 guys like that in the league. So I think it's okay that Wright is not that kind of player.
No, I didn't say that it wasn't okay, but okay. He's billed as this superstar, and he's just not. I'm sorry, but he's just no leader. The Mets need a leader. And you know what? We're going to take a break, and in the second half of this show, we're going to talk about trades and Sandy Alderson and whatever else pops into our head.
All right.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Cosmic Music, 24/7 on CosmicRadio.com. CosmicRadio.com.
Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com.
TalkSuperStation.com.
TalkSuperStation.com.
That's right, the superstation of talk.
Talking to you each and every day.
We have a lot to talk about.
Monday.
Government is not the answer. Elf is the answer.
Hey, guys, I'm here.
Tuesday.
The Yankees are always good.
We are going to go for old-timers now.
Well, I think I feel. I'm a Mets fan. We have clothespin.
Wednesday.
You and I are staying put.
Thank goodness, because I have no socks on, and staying put is what I need to do.
Thursday.
I would love Martin Sheen actually decided to run for president. I would vote for him.
Friday.
You know how hard it is to get a topic not about sports on ESPN Radio? It's about as hard as me introducing sports on this show.
Saturday.
It's time to party.
And Sunday.
How can we respect anyone in Washington, D.C.?
Every day, we talk to you.
Sit back and enjoy this.
TalkSuperStation.com. Talk spoken here.
Are you tired of boring sports websites that's about the same old company line? If you are, then I'd invite you to stop over to thesportsgoons.com. The Reggie commentary and a weekly podcast highlighting today's issues is second to none. That's thesportsgoons.com. The new media has arrived.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnasons.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
Welcome back. We're here once again on the Phil Nason Show talking Mets baseball tonight. And joining me as always to do that is bloggingmets.com owner, writer, editor, the whole shebang, Mr. Mark Berman. And I'll tell you what, we started off the show with some great excitement, and it was exciting. It still is exciting when someone goes that far. But one thing that happened this week that really, I don't know, kind of ticked me off, and it doesn't take much when it comes to the Mets these days to tick me off, was a report I saw on, and I could actually thank Joey Bag of Donuts for this, on Mets.com. And they're talking now here. This is the part of the ending of the article. It is this. With starting pitchers Matt Harvey and Zach Wheeler already entrenched in the rotation and several other promising young arms coming up through the system, the Mets feel they are closer to competing on an annual basis than they have been since the middle of the last decade. So they will not do anything to disrupt their roster unless it makes sense for 2014. Not 2015 or 2016 or beyond. And then this is a quote from Terry Collins. What the plan has been since Sandy took over is to build up the organization, build up the minor league system, get some of these young, talented guys up here. And I think it's coming to hold true. And finally, this blurb ends with, how much the roster will transform at the trade deadline, if at all, remains to be seen. But with Alderson's plan so plain to see, do not expect any number trade talks or negotiations to change the team's thinking in the coming days. Right. Outside of them needing a better editor.
Yeah.
yeah, we've been saying this all along. This is why we don't have to believe, because we already know they are going to do nothing. And this I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, for the first is trading players that they have, guys like Marlon Byrd. Marlon Byrd, you know, he's been great. He's far exceeded everyone's expectations. But he's not part of the team's future. He's not going to be on the team next year. Why are they holding on to him? So they can win one or two more games? Trade him for whatever you can get. And you parlayed a minor league contract into a possible chip, you know, for the future. But the idea that he's asking for a Zach Wheeler-type prospect for Byrd is ridiculous, because Marlon Byrd is not Carlos Beltran. He's just not. So they're going to make the same mistake they made with Scott Harrison last year. They're going to get nothing for him, and he'll be a free agent, and the Mets won't sign him. So I don't understand that thinking at all.
Nope, I don't either. It makes no sense, because there's no way he's going to want to return to the New York Mets.
No, and there's no way the Mets would want him, because he's not going to – what he's doing now is shocking. He's not going to do it again next year.
No.
He's just not.
And even if he does – you know, here's the other thing, and I hate to bring this up, but this is his best season in his entire career, I think. And remember, and the year he was an all-star, remember, he tested positive for something, and he ended up missing like 50 games the next year.
Well, that was last year that he tested positive.
Oh, it was? Okay.
Yeah.
Still, but the Magic Beans didn't help him last year.
Right. Well, I mean, do you know his explanation?
No.
He basically, he developed male breasts a couple of years ago. I don't know how that happened, but he was taking tamoxifen, which is a breast cancer drug that women take after they have breast cancer surgery. But it's also something that dopers take to cover up doping. I don't understand the science exactly, but apparently it covers it up. So he was taking it for this medical purpose, he says. And, you know, if we believe him, then he just made a mistake. And, you know, he never took steroids for enhancement purposes, if he's telling the truth. So we can assume he's clean if he's not lying. But there you go.
Well, I'm not insinuating that he's doing anything. But,
some people are. That's why I wanted to say that. I wasn't
right.
saying
you. I wouldn't do that, because that's not nice. But
right.
Still in all, that's another thing that you have to think about. I would trade him, today, and I wouldn't even hesitate, because even if you get a tier two player for him, it's more than coming up with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You paid the guy some X amount of dollars. Yep, he got his chance to show he can still play in the major leagues. And he's going to take his talent somewhere else, and the Mets are going to be left high and dry again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better to get something than nothing. But yeah. Sandy Alderson's plan is to just let everyone go, like he did with Jose Reyes, knowing for sure he wasn't going to try to resign him. They don't make sense. Sandy Alderson doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
I know. I mean, I wrote about a month ago, and I'm sure we talked about this. He said, you know, the Mets could be buyers at the trade deadline, because, you know, if we can get a power-hitting outfielder, then I only have to get one more in the offseason. So we definitely might be buyers. And now we find out today, a team official tells the New York Post, Alderson's not even making phone calls.
Remember, we also called BS on that, too. Remember?
Yeah. But I kind of believed him that he was maybe going to acquire someone.
He's not going to do anything this winter, either.
I know. But quote from the Post, it's hard to go to people. They have to come to you. It's better to be asked to the prom than have to ask somebody, which means the Mets aren't making any phone calls. They're just sitting back waiting for teams to come to them. And it's the same kind of passive approach that Alderson always takes. He took the same approach with R.A. Dickey. He was just waiting for teams to come to him instead of being aggressive and going out and shopping the guy and saying, hey, we got this guy. Here's what we want. He's not doing it. And the fact, I mean, you know, and as far as the power hitting outfielder, maybe no one's available. But, you know, how does he know unless he actually makes the phone calls? Does he know that Carlos Gonzalez isn't available? No, he doesn't know. He's not calling the Rockies. So I don't get this guy I don't know if he's just a serial liar or he just says what he thinks people want to hear at the time. I don't know. But he just does nothing after claiming he's going to do something. And it's wearing thin.
But you don't see anyone taking him to a task either.
No. The beat writers are starting to a little bit. And I think if he doesn't do anything in the off season, he'll face a lot of criticism because the money's coming off. They have $40 million, committed to next season. If they don't still have the same payroll and get new players, there's going to be a lot of criticism. But I can see them having an $80 million payroll next year. Sure. And I can see Alderson saying, we were ready to spend money, but the players that are just aren't there. And some people might believe him, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's depressing when you know they have some money to spend and they don't do it because there are players out there. He just doesn't want to go get them. Obviously, he doesn't even care enough to look.
Yeah, and Wilpon, I think during the All-Star break was talking about the payroll, and they asked a question like, "Will you ever go up to $140 million again?" And he said, "No, Sandy doesn't want us. Doesn't think we should invest." I don't remember. The quote was basically that Sandy doesn't think we should pay that much money, or Sandy doesn't want to invest that much money or spend that much money. But it's like, what kind of GM doesn't want to spend as much money as they can? So where to believe that the Wilpon said to Alderson, "Yeah, spend as much as you want." Alderson, "Nah, I don't want to spend money to build a team. That's irresponsible." What kind of GM would ever say that?
Well, I don't believe anything that comes from the Wilponsies.
Me either. But I think Alderson's a bigger liar than all of them.
You know something though, I'm going to say something that might shock you.
Okay.
But you know that I do a show every week with the Oakland A's guy. You knew that. You used to be on that Friday show with him, or follow him or whatever. But needless to say, they have a lot of these people that listen to that show also listen to the other baseball shows we do. Mm-hmm. And after that happened, people were starting to write. Writers were talking about the Sandy Alderson days when he was in Oakland. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I sent you this link, and I should have because I was going to save it for one of those rainy days where we could talk about. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they're extolling his virtues over there like crazy. They say that he's the precursor to Moneyball and that it was him that taught Billy Beane the things that he knows. And it's Sandy Alderson who's the reason the Oakland A's are still have success. It was really well written. And these guys know because they remember him. But my question is, where is it here? So is it Sandy Alderson he's no buffoon. He's right. A highly educated man. He's a military, ex-military guy. He knows a thing or two about organization and dealing with things. But good grief, I haven't seen anything yet from this guy. Really?
I agree. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he was the guy who sort of came up with, not that he came up with the statistical analysis, but kind of said maybe there's more to statistics than what we've been doing. Let's look at it deeper. That wouldn't shock me. But the big thing is the player evaluation, which was all Billy Beane, because we've seen, and Sandy Alderson has shown us evidence time and time again that he has no ability to judge a player. I mean, look at all these bullpen guys he's brought in. Look at all the players he's brought in. He's brought in almost no good players. So whatever his genius is in statistical analysis or finding value in cheap players, he has no talent evaluator skills at all.
Okay, so Zach Wheeler, he's the one that traded for him.
Yes, he did. He made a good trade getting Zach Wheeler, made a good trade getting Travis d'Arnaud, although ruined it by not letting him start the season with the Mets and thus getting injured and blowing the whole season. But two good trades does not make you a good general manager or make you a great talent evaluator. You look at all the guys he brought in, DJ Carrasco and Brad Emus and Chin Wing Wang Hu, whatever his name was. Blaine Boyer, remember him? Taylor Buchholz, all these guys he brought in who were supposed to be so good, and they were terrible. So, you know, he's got a lot more misses than hits.
Brad Ehmus.
Yeah, yeah. Juan Lagares. Yeah, so he has a lot more misses than hits. So you can't judge a guy based on two good trades. You have to judge him on the whole and the whole of the team. And the fact is, since Alderson took over, the Mets have lost each year, have lost more games than they've won the year before. So that's not a good track record.
That's fair enough. Speaking of hits and misses, Ike Davis.
He misses a lot.
He's awful. You know, he's the biggest bust in Mets history. If for first round draft choices, he has to be. Or has to be at the top of that list. He's at the completely top of mine. What a bum. This guy.
You know what,
go ahead.
You could definitely make an argument that he's the biggest bust in team history.
And I've tried so many times.
Yeah, and I wouldn't argue with you, but I think people might have a different definition of bust because they might look at a guy like Lasting's Millage, who never made it at all, and say, oh, he's a bigger bust. I think I agree with you because Ike Davis showed so much talent, and then it just went away. So the expectations were so high because he actually showed it in the majors that he was a player, and then to lose it so quickly definitely makes him a bigger bust than someone like Lasting's Millage, who never really showed anything.
Yeah, that's what they always want to bring up, Lasting's Millage. When you talk about busts, you talk about guys that get to the show and can't get it done. Lasting's Millage is just Lasting's Millage.
Right.
Lasting's Millage might have mental issues, really. But when you go over to Fangraphs, and I suggest you folks who think Ike Davis is the next best thing to slice bread, you need to really look. And look more than just, well, he hit a home run Saturday. It was Saturday, right?
Sure, why not? Actually, I'll tell you.
You were there, right?
I was on Sunday's game.
Oh, yeah. He hit a home run when it didn't matter.
Yeah, it was.
I think he hit a home 26. Run against the first when Mejia was there.
Yeah, on the Friday game.
In the Mejia game, because I think I almost had a heart attack.
Yeah.
To the point where I was ready to call, hey, honey, it's time to go to the hospital now. Really? I couldn't believe it. And I was thinking, I can't wait till all the people start flaming me. Big bust, huh? And then he went back to doing what he does best.
Yep.
Strike out. He's awful. Really awful. I don't see why he's even in the lineup anymore.
I think at this point, they have to try to resurrect him.
What is
it? I mean, they're paying him $3 million. They're paying him $3 million. Yeah, I know. That's why I kept talking. They're paying him $3 million. So they got to try to get something out of him. I mean, that's why Sean Markham, had he not gotten injured, he would have stayed in rotation because they were paying him so much money. But, you know, and they also need to see if this is him for the rest of the season, then they're not going to tender him a contract. And they need to make that decision based on, you know, what he does for the rest of the season, I think.
Yeah, okay. I think they already should know. He's brutal.
Yeah.
Really, really bad. What's he batting now? 175, 173?
176, I think.
After tonight, it'll be less because, what is he, taking another over?
Yeah. Oh, this includes tonight so far, 176.
Jeez.
It's a shame because I like the guy. Like, he showed so much promise. It's a shame. And he seems like a decent guy, although he might be a little bit of a complainer. But it's sad because the Mets have so many holes, and the funny thing is we all figured, okay, the infield is going to be fine. We got Davis, Murphy, Tejada, and Wright, so the infield's fine. Worry about the outfield, the pitching, and the catching. And now suddenly half of that infield is gone. So that's what hurts the most, I think, that what was going to be a positive, sure thing is not anymore.
He almost suckered me after the second half of last season.
We all got suckered. We were like, okay, so the first half was an anomaly. Second half was the real Ike Davis, but we found out, nope, not at all.
Nope, not at all. Fangraphs is a little bit behind the game. They're at 178 for him. Mm-hmm. An on-base percentage of 273.
That is excellent.
Yeah, isn't it? Here you go, 2010. Now listen to this. He batted 264. On-base percentage of 351. And a slug of 440. The following year was his shortened year. He batted, he only played 36 games. He was 302, 383, and 543. Then in 2012, he played 156 games. He batted 227 with a 308 on-base percentage and a 462 slug. And this year, oh, forget about it.
Yeah.
Oh, Mato, he is awful. This is just not even funny. It's a complete regression. Here you were, and there you are.
Yeah, and I don't understand. I mean, something is going wrong.
He can't hit anymore.
Yeah, but there's got to be a reason. Like,
did he get lucky? You think it was luck?
No.
Because you know what, that streak though he had from when he came up with the Mets in 2010, when Daniel Murphy got hurt, and 2011 was pretty freaking incredible.
Yeah, in fact, he said himself he was always a slow starter. Now we know that for sure.
Well, he wasn't a slow starter that year in 2011.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. So he surprised himself that he got off to that start, and he was thinking this is going to be an incredible year, and then he got freak injury, and that just kept getting worse because the Mets crack medical staff.
They're the best.
Yeah, I love that. Let's put him in a boot so we can demobilize the ankle, and that made it worse. How do they do that? I don't understand that.
I don't either.
Did he ever sue for malpractice? That seems like a.
I don't think they can. I think that they're because they're property of the team.
Uh-huh.
But they're allowed to get a second opinion.
As long as you check. Check first.
A-Rod, he's got his issues too, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
That ought to be interesting. It'll be interesting for us to talk about next week because that hammer's coming down on him.
It's coming soon.
Now, so I don't guess we can't even think about the Mets moving anyone or trying to acquire anyone.
They won't. I mean, they apparently to trade Bobby Parnell, they have to be blown away, which actually makes sense because he's someone who is a really good pitcher and could be part of the future. So I would still trade him for an impact bat if it's possible, but I wouldn't trade him for a prospect.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, there are some guys out there who are maybe trying to do things that the Mets aren't doing, like try to win and build their teams. The White Sox, Jake Peavy, he's not going to start against the Indians. That means he's gone.
Right.
Now, everyone tells me, we talked about this on Monday's show, with Stephen Goldman, it looks like he's going to be with the Oakland A's.
Although now they're saying the latest is that the Diamondbacks are the front runner.
Yeah, I see that here now too.
Yeah.
And that's
interesting. They would trade Ian Kennedy to clear some salary.
They're going to trade Ian Kennedy for PVA?
Well, it would be a three-team deal. Ian Kennedy would go to Anaheim or
right.
Los Angeles at Anaheim. I don't know who – I don't know where other players would end up. But, yeah, basically it would be PV for – Kennedy.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. That is interesting. Kennedy is disappointing this season. He had that one really good year. But he's 3-7 with a 5.22 ERA. That's Mike Pelfrey numbers.
Yeah, it is. I'll tell you what though. I don't think he wants to go to LA anywhere. He's going to get his butt kicked.
Yeah.
If he sees Yasiel Puig in the streets, that's Puig might kill him.
And definitely doesn't want to go back to the American League just because that'll raise his ERA even higher.
Oh, Lord. He better hope to God he goes somewhere a long way away from the Dodgers because they want to hang him.
Yeah.
You don't throw at people's heads, and he sure did.
Yeah.
Zach,
I never understood the trade when the Yankees traded him to Arizona. The Yankees got Granderson, which was a good deal for them. But Arizona traded Max Scherzer in that deal, and he ended up in Detroit. And I remember Max Scherzer was really highly regarded, and he had a halfway decent rookie year, and then they just gave up on him for Ian Kennedy, and I thought that was really strange. And Kennedy had that one good year, but Scherzer is probably going to win the Cy Young Award this year.
Yeah, he could.
So that was a very puzzling deal on Arizona's part, and now they're going to get rid of Kennedy to get Jake Peavy, who was excellent when he was younger, but now is how old?
He's only a rental.
32
though.
Years old.
He's a rental.
Well, no, he's signed for next season also.
Peavy is?
Yeah, he signed. 2014. Oh, and 2015 player option.
Right. Okay.
So he's nothing going to happen for a couple of years. He's having a decent year this year, 8-4. 4.28 ERA, but that's the American League.
Yeah, but it's a lousy team, too.
Yeah.
Big hitting Central Division, too. I'll tell you what, that's interesting to see him in Arizona. But Arizona has to do something because they lost their lead to the Dodgers. Everybody lost to the Dodgers. Dodgers are in last place from worst to first.
Yeah. I'm happy for the Dodgers. I mean, they had too much talent to be a last place team, although so do the Angels, and they're for the Astros, they'd be in last place. Arizona, I don't think they're going to – I don't think, it doesn't matter what they do. I don't think they're going to catch the Dodgers. And they're not going to be a wild card, certainly. That's going to be the Reds and the Cardinals and the Pirates, one or two of those teams.
Well, I'll tell you this. There's another one here. Bud Norris was scratched from Houston. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
They have to get rid of Bud. You know, that's another thing. Houston just gets rid of their pieces, but they're stockpiling like nuts, like squirrels with nuts for the winter, because they've got an amazing farm system now.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like he's out of there. Lucas Harrell has replaced him, and it does look like he's gone.
Yeah, they'll trade. I mean, they're cutting salaries. He's making $3 million, which is probably one of their highest paid players, which is hard to say. He's definitely gone. And why not? I mean, they're not winning. If they can get back a couple of prospects for him, load up for the future.
I think they should do what Sandy Alderson does and stay on pat, because he knows Sandy Alderson's a genius.
Oh yeah.
Ugh.
The Phillies are interesting. At the trade deadline, I got a couple of friends who are Phillies fans and just despise Ruben Amaro with a passion. And the funny thing is, I always liked Amaro because he did what like Alderson never did. Like, he went out, he traded for Roy Halladay, traded for Cliff Lee, traded for Roy Oswalt. I mean, and signed Lee again, made incredible deals. And so I thought he was a good GM, but my friends hate this guy. Apparently, Cliff Lee will not be traded, which, I mean, makes sense. If they're going to compete for next year, you want Lee to be there. And they're oddly working on an extension for Chase Utley, which I thought was kind of weird, because he was a trade candidate, and now suddenly they want to keep him for next year, and he's getting older, and he's always injured.
I would think he'd be gone first.
Yeah, me too, but apparently they're working on an extension.
Maybe that's what they're doing, is work the extension out and make him even more trade friendly.
If it's a friendly one, I can't imagine Utley's going to sign anything that's team friendly. I don't think that it happens anymore.
No, I think the Philadelphia Phillies. Jeez, who knows?
I was going to say the Papelbon. They may not trade Papelbon. They should trade Papelbon. I mean, he's making what's he making? 13, 14 million. He's making a lot of money.
Yeah, he's making a lot of money. He's getting the job done, but the problem is this amazing starting staff is not getting them the ball.
Right. And if they want to reload for next year, as we said last week, if the Mets traded Parnell, every week, every offseason, there are many, many closers available. There's no reason to ever pay a closer $15 million unless he's Mariano Rivera, because there's always closers available.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So, yeah, the Phillies, I think they're trying to decide if they can even compete this year or what's going to happen for the future. But Amaro is not making a lot of friends as far as my friends.
Yeah, but I don't mind seeing that, all those mistakes.
No, no, me either. Don't get me wrong.
But anyway, I'll tell you what. We've got about a minute left.
Okay.
Ah, geez. What a bummer, man. We started out with such high hopes. How positive I was to begin the show.
I know. There was going to be a no-hitter. We were going to be whooping it up. And
I thought for sure. I had the clap meter going. I was ready.
Yeah. And now it looks like we're going to go to extra innings.
Last thing, though, when we talk about the Dodgers, they signed Brian Wilson today.
Oh, did they?
Mm-hmm.
I knew that he was going to sign with someone. I didn't see that.
He's something.
Yeah, if he's healthy, that's a huge pickup.
You know what? They've got a bunch of closers in the minors. They got Carlos Marmol. Now they'll have Brian Wilson. Mm-hmm. They got tons of guys. The Dodgers are no joke, man. They've got a bunch of options. And I still look for the Dodgers to make another move.
Yeah, me too. I mean, when you've got the money to spend like that, the sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want.
Exactly. And the Mets have the money too, but they just don't want to pay and spend it anymore.
No.
So we get to watch Ike Davis swing and miss, swing and miss, swing and miss. I've seen better swings on a porch.
But I want to tell you. Soon Lucas Dude will come back so we can watch him swing and miss also.
Oh, Lord in heavens. And the way he wears his hat, forget about it. This is like my favorite thing now, watching Lucas Duda. I'm so thrilled. Anyway, Mark, great stuff tonight. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks again for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. That was Mark Berman, and you can find him at bloggingmets.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. Once again, we want to thank Mark Berman for being here each and every week talking Mets baseball. Tomorrow night, we're going to be talking San Antonio Spurs hoops, Oklahoma City Thunder hoops, and the Memphis Grizzly hoops. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves and be good. And most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.